Today's episode of The Beat is brought to you by the Waterworks and Header HVAC, now better to serve you together and proud sponsors of Ohio State Athletics. Three wins will get Ohio State a national championship, and three things will get you a Thursday on The Beat. Welcome to the Austin and Berm Show. It is presented by the Waterworks. He is Jeremy Birmingham. I am Austin Ward. And the first of those three wins, Berm, we still don't know who Ohio State is even going to play in the Cotton Bowl. And there hasn't been a lot of or much practice to break down. There's no media availability and scheduled until Monday. It's I don't like it being this quiet.
No, it's kind of weird because obviously there are three, four pretty big football games this weekend, right? So it seems like
there's two big ones and then two blowouts.
There's four games that are important to be played this weekend as far as the college football playoffs eventual outcome. And it seems like because of all the Sherrone Moore stuff, because of everything else that just goes on in the world of college football right now, no one's actually talking about these games this weekend. Or maybe I just don't watch ESPN, which is also very true. But like maybe they're talking about it there, but it seems like everyone's just waiting for this weekend to finish up so that the Kalen DeBoer to Michigan thing can either happen or not happen, or Kenny Dillingham. It's like everything is just sort of waiting on that move before the next like onslaught of news comes, and no one's actually talking about the games themselves. No one's breaking down why James Madison is going to upset Oregon.
That's because they're not going to. But again,
That's true. Okay, fact check. True, they're not going to upset Oregon. Is that? Will that? Let's just dive in here. This is not an Ohio State related thought, but we're spitballing. We're going. When Oregon beats James Madison by 50 points this weekend, is that the end of the automatic qualifier for the group of five, or group of four schools, group of five? How long can this go on? Because it's so pointless. And or is it only just a matter of, hey, they're going to expand the playoff anyway, so you can keep in your group of five schools and they just become less and less relevant?
I mean, I don't think that they're intending to kill that, because the Power Four still needs, at this point, because they're not going to branch off and form a super league. They're not going to pool the broadcast rights between the Big Ten and the SEC. And if they're not going to take my idea to play a 12-game Big Ten schedule and eliminate non-conference opponents, then you still have to have the MAC in the Mountain West or the Pac 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever number it is, involved in. You have to have them have a path to compete and pretend like they're on the same playing field. So that part, I think, is unfortunate, because we're not going to see James Madison or Tulane or even Boise State ever win three games in Boise State's case a year ago and win the national championship. They're not built to do so. So it's a little bit of a charade that I think is annoying. And I think it's also why ESPN shuffled off those two lopsided matchups to TNT. It's like, well, no one's going to watch these, and the outcome is not in any kind of jeopardy. So it's funny to me that the college football playoff, the broadcast partners, the conference commissioners all know that these games aren't going to hold any actual substance and are continuing to hijack the competitive balance of not just the playoff field, but the entire season by insisting that they are all playing the same sport when they're not.
Yeah, and I think it's unfortunate, obviously, even more so this year, because you look at both of those teams in James Madison and Tulane, and they both have lame duck coaches. Like, they're going, like, it's not like you're even getting the best version of those schools, because those coaches are pulling double duty and trying to work two jobs. And there's no way, as a head coach, I think that you're able to do that successfully. And then you add in Ole Miss, and there's three teams of the eight playing this weekend that have a lame duck coach, or in Ole Miss's case, have already changed their head coach in the last 2 weeks. And it just seems like are things that need to be considered.
Kalen DeBoer coaches the fourth one.
Right. So like, it's just very strange to see, because this round of the playoffs, almost in some way, and we saw it last year with the exception of the Ohio State Tennessee game, even that one was a blowout. Like, this first round of the playoffs is just turning into blowout city, and then you get to the real games next week.
All right. Well, at least you mentioned Ohio State at the end there, so that we can get back into some, you know, some thoughts, three thoughts, maybe more, about the Buckeyes. We are going to take all of your thoughts on Friday. That is going to be another Freaky Friday mailbag. Some questions already trickling into the Austin and Berm Show at gmail.com. We appreciate you for sending those questions, comments, concerns, thoughts, anything else. We'll gladly take them and try and incorporate them into the Friday version of the beat presented by the Waterworks. And on Saturday, because there have not been practice snap judgments or press conference snap judgments for us to get into, whenever Texas A&M in Miami is wrapped up on Saturday, Berm and I will have some instant reaction on that to start breaking down what that means for Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl. But also, we're going to put a bow on the regular season right now. So we've had a chance to mock some of the awards voters, most notably the Biletnikoff group that did not think that Jeremiah Smith was the best wide receiver in the country for whatever reason. So I came up with three awards categories for Three Thoughts Thursday, starting with Berm's biggest surprise of the season for Ohio State.
I can't start anywhere other than Bo Jackson, I guess. I mean, it's...
Oh, come on!
Sorry, I mean, that's an easy one, I know, but it's low-hanging fruit. And it's not even because I didn't think Bo was, like, potentially going to be good at Ohio State. It's because his entire high school career... He bounced back and forth between linebacker and running back, didn't play exclusively running back ever, dealt with injuries multiple times, and you just weren't sure that he was going to have an opportunity as early as he did to become what he's become. And he is the clear-cut number one running back for Ohio State. He is the guy now that you can pencil in as a presumptive starter for not just 1 year, not just 2 years, but 3 years, which is huge for Carlos Lockwood and the benefit that it provides Ohio State down the road. And he's only getting better. So I think it has to be Bo Jackson, because you go into this year and all of the conversation was about James Peoples, and then you threw in CJ Donaldson, a lot of buzz about him in the spring. And we both were told back in March, like, hey, keep an eye on Bo Jackson. It's like, yeah, okay, we'll believe it when we see it. And then you see it. And it was so obvious at the first game he was out there in week two, that he saw the field differently than James and CJ were doing at that time. And I think James has certainly improved throughout the year and has put himself in a position where there's certainly a role for him. But what Bo Jackson has brought the Ohio State offense, especially in the middle part of November when they were relying on the run game and Jeremiah and Carnell were taking some time off, like it seemed like you had a guy that you could count on as a bell cow 25-30 carry a game back if you wanted it, which... It doesn't seem to be Ohio State's preference and doesn't seem to be the way they're leaning ever at that position again, in my opinion. But Bo has certainly proven that he can be that guy. And now you have a bona fide superstar in the making for the next 2 years. So he was definitely not someone in the recruiting cycle that you penciled in as a guaranteed starter year one. And yeah, running back's the easiest position on the field to do that, but it still takes a lot of work and a lot of things breaking the right way. And everything broke Bo's way, and when he had his opportunity, he took it and, I guess, ran with it.
Well, it's not even that he was bouncing back and forth between linebacker and running back, and it was also that he was injured in his high school career and didn't finish it healthy on the field. So when Carlos Lockland showed up, you know, I think he had a press conference in February before training camp started or before spring ball started, and it was like, I really like the way Bo Jackson works. I like his mentality. I like everything he's bringing to the table. It's like, okay, that's great. But is that because you recruited this guy? You're very excited about him. You got to know him personally over the last 12 months. And like, you see a bright future, because I would understand that. And guys are going to go to bat for their players. But it was still hard to, I didn't know how much he was actually going to participate in March and April. I definitely was still like unsure about what that role would look like heading into August. He didn't play at all against Texas because you had James Peoples and CJ Donaldson with more experience that they brought to the table. It's just like, okay. But even still, we're not done yet. We had the entire September conversation about him fumbling and will he earn the trust of Carlos Lockwood and Ryan Day to have the football in his hands when it matters. And then that turned the page to, okay, he's getting better here. Now are you going to give him 15 to 20 carries a game? And that still didn't quite happen because that's just the way Ohio State wants to manage it. But even with all of those questions, and at every turn, Bo Jackson would cross another threshold and say, yep, can handle that, can handle this, can pick up a blitz. He rushes for 1,000 yards. I absolutely did not see that coming. I didn't know that we were going to have to start with the first thing being complete agreement, but Bo Jackson's emergence, I think, is unquestionably the biggest surprise. I would love to find anybody who thought that 1,000 yards and the starting role in Ohio State's backfield heading into the Cotton Bowl was going to be Bo Jackson 4 months ago. I don't think that person exists. And I don't think that person exists in the Woody Hayes Athletic Center either.
No, I mean, it's not a situation. Again, I've told the story anecdotally a number of times in the last few years about how I was told when Marvin Harrison came into the facility as a early enrolled freshman that he was the guy that shocked the Ohio State staff in a way that nobody else had previous. Like, he was so much better than they thought he was going to be in the recruiting cycle. And I think Bo Jackson's in that conversation as well. Since we were in agreement there, and this show thrives on disagreement and animosity.
Well, we don't.
And people love when we argue with each other. On the count of three, I'm going to say one other player who was, like, as far as the biggest surprise of the year. And then you can say someone after I say someone.
All right.
3, 2, 1, Taiwan Malone.
Yeah, well, I was about to talk to him about him because it was the thing that I was most wrong about, which was thing number two. And if we're talking about somebody on the defense, not only was he a surprise, but I was also dead wrong to exclude Taiwan Malone from playing a prominent role. So you can threaten me with a knife again if you want. People did like that. But I don't know that we're actually going to argue about, like, the biggest surprises and things that have materialized for this team. A lot of it we haven't maybe shown a bright enough spotlight on, but Taiwan Malone, I think, deserves so much credit for his elevation. And partly the reason that I'm so we can say that he was a surprise, and partly the fact that I was wrong, was because I really thought that Edric Houston would explode from day one at the start of his sophomore season at the three tech position alongside Caden McDonald. And that didn't quite happen. So someone else had to fill that void. And Taiwan did that. Now, that's not to say that I would view Edric Houston's year as a disappointment, because he is certainly back on the upswing. He was able to get returned to the starting lineup in the second half of the year, alternating and rotating more with Taiwan Malone. And some of this is not Edric Houston's fault at all. He got hurt on the very first day of training camp, and sometimes that gets glossed over because Ohio State cleared him to start against Texas, and he played a full lion's share of the snaps in that matchup. But, like, I don't think he was ever fully healthy until the middle of the season. Even still, somebody else had to make the most of that opportunity, and Taiwan Malone did. And I don't think that he gets nearly enough credit for the work that he did.
No, he certainly doesn't. And you have to consider how much different this defense would have looked had he not done that. I mean, he not only became a reliable part of the defense, but he became a playmaker on the defense. And, you know, you look back at the way that Ty Hamilton and other guys in the last few years, Jerron Cage, even people like that, when they got into their final season, like, they just became, like, steady contributors. And at times, Taiwan Malone was an absolute game wrecker for Ohio State in games at points. And that's why, to me, the biggest surprise, again, if you go back to conversations we had with people in the spring, I'm thinking specifically of a sit down we had with Matt Carreri, the conversation was never, like, clear cut, black and white. Jalen McClain is so much better than anybody else in the secondary, not named Caleb Downs. And I think Jalen McClain is probably the most underappreciated player on this entire roster for what he's done. And then you project him forward and you think about what his role may be next year, and the way that he's learned from Caleb Downs this year, and the way that Ohio State has realized that they can use Jalen in the future. The fact that Malik Hartford became an afterthought and not necessary to play at all for Ohio State this entire season was absolutely not something I would have thought was the case back in March or April. I'm not going to say I was ever saying that Jalen couldn't be a big time player or a regular contributor, but the fact that he absolutely eliminated the need for any other safety to play back there, and became not just a really versatile guy against the run, in coverage, but he also became a physical hitter. Like, he's a guy that you just really, like, look at and you're like, wow, that is a big time recruiting win, a big time evaluation win for Ohio State 2 years ago when they brought him in from New Jersey. So I think that those two are obviously at different points of their career, Taiwan and Jalen being a fifth year guy and a second year guy, but Jalen McClain's emergence has been an absolute godsend for the Ohio State defense, and all the things that they're able to do with Caleb Downs, they're able to do because of Jalen McClain being so trustworthy and always in the right spot so that Caleb can move around. So I don't think that they would have had that this year if Malik Hartford was relied upon the way that we thought he was going to be. So to me, it's Jalen McClain. Hey, everybody, it's Berm. Jeremy Birmingham from the Austin and Berm Show on 97.1 The Fan. It's confession time. I finally stopped pretending I was fine and started Awaken 180 last Monday. I've watched Austin melt away. I've watched Brandon shrink in real time. I've seen Scotty Vegas and those guys all look like they're aging in reverse, while I've continued to hold on to 40 additional pounds from the COVID years like it's a media credential. Now, of course, spending 6 hours a day in the car multiple times a week doesn't help, but we all have excuses. The holidays, that's another excuse, but I'm dropping that and already cruising through week one with Awaken 180, feeling the difference. I just feel better, primarily in my joints, and anyone who has arthritis like me knows it's not a joke, especially as we get up there in age. The decreased inflammation I'm already feeling is awesome. There's power in waking up eager to start the day, and Awaken 180 is giving that to me. If you've been watching everyone else succeed, thinking, yeah, maybe someday, trust me, someday starts today. I weigh in next week, and I bet I'll already have lost 10 pounds. Do yourselves a favor, do what we all did, and choose the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.
Yeah, I think if you cut that tape on, I mean, I was on the record probably multiple times over the summer with position preview, review, rewind crystal balls that I thought Malik Hartford would start against Texas, and I thought that he would be really good this season. And, you know, he had the shoulder injury, or what appears to be a shoulder injury. He's been effectively been ruled out for the season, not going to play in the postseason. But he had taken the redshirt opportunity after four games alongside CJ Hicks. So, I mean, not only was I wrong from day one with Jalen McClain claiming that job, but, you know, the fact that it was never even a competition with him after that was not something I think that either one of us had really considered. And that's for you. You have spoken repeatedly over the last year and a half about the upside with Jalen McClain, and this could be the time that he makes a move. So it's not as if you didn't tell me that that was a possibility. It's not as if I didn't know that that was a possibility. And you're referencing that conversation with Matt Guerrieri heading into spring ball. It's like, all right, one of these guys has to emerge. And Jalen McClain, I think, took that on himself in a way that is really impressive and became invaluable, because for Ohio State, for Matt Patricia to do all the things that they want, they can't move Caleb Downs all over the field. They can't blitz him. They can't drop him into coverage. They can't put him in the box if they don't trust someone alongside him. That's what Jim Knowles had with Jordan Hancock and Lathan Ransom a year ago. And Lorenzo Styles provided a lot of stability. I know that there are still plays that he got picked on against Indiana. And we think back to the deep ball against Ohio, and the lowest moments of his season are always going to stand out more than the reliability. But I think Ohio State always had a lot of faith that he would know the system and allow Caleb Downs the flexibility, but it was up to Jalen McClain to do the rest. And he absolutely did that.
Yeah, I think about Jalen kind of in the same breath as Caden Curry, which is like, I expected that he would be a pretty valuable piece of the defense, but the reason you get to be the number one ranked defense in the country in the way Ohio State has been is because guys like Jalen McClain and guys like Caden Curry took that opportunity and just shut the door on everyone else. I mean, if you think about, if we take this same conversation, like the biggest surprises or things we were wrong about, and flip it on its head, think about what we expected out of Bo Atkinson this year, and how that was basically stymied by Caden Curry and Kenyatta Jackson saying, we're not going to give these guys the opportunity. And then the similar conversation for me on the offensive line with Ethan Anianwa and how Philip Daniels.
You just can't stop thinking about that comeback story.
Hey, man, as a 44-year-old coming out and doing it big. But yeah, I mean, Ethan Anianwa and the way that Philip Daniels emerged and became, when he was healthy, a really good right tackle option for Ohio State, you know, and then all of a sudden you have these big time transfers in the last year, the guys that were counted on as the real difference makers in the transfer class for Ohio State, and neither one of them became anything important to this Buckeye team. And I think that that's a good reminder for folks that you're going to get your Caleb Downs's, your Justin Fields, but then sometimes you're going to spend money on guys that maybe aren't ready to take the leap to Ohio State that other guys have proven they are.
Yeah, I like how you spun that into something that maybe that we were right about, which is Ohio State's approach to roster management and retention and recruiting and development. And it's a fine line, because Ohio State is going to continue to have to bring in additions through the transfer portal, especially, you know, if we wind up being wrong about Wednesday's stock watch and Kenyatta Jackson and Caden McDonald explode and then leave for the NFL draft and the entire defensive front has to be retooled. Well, there's still going to be opportunity for Bo Atkinson to prove that he's an asset to Ohio State, that he can elevate his game and be a pass rushing threat, that CJ Hicks could step up and help there, not just with the loss of Kenyatta, but also Arvell Reese. But, you know, that would not be ideal because those are two examples of players that Bo Atkinson wasn't short of suitors in the transfer portal, especially given the time that he left North Carolina. And Ethan Onyanwa definitely wasn't, because the NFL draft was on the table for him as well. So it is always going to be a crapshoot. Yes, Caleb Downs is as close to a sure thing as you will ever find. And the fact that he was available to Ohio State or anybody else in the country is almost like a once in a generation scenario. Same sort of deal for Justin Fields. That was even pre-NIL and all the other conversations. Like, those sorts of impactful transfers are the exception. They are not the rule. They're not the norm. And, you know, I think even if you look at the first year when Josh Simmons arrived at left tackle and some of the ups and downs, he was not a ready-made first-round draft pick at that time. So you don't want to have to rely on that. And I don't say any of that to be dismissive of Onyanwa or Bo Atkinson. You know, maybe Onyanwa plays a key role in this ongoing conversation about replacing Tegra Shabol in the playoff. I don't know. There's still a little less than 2 weeks to go until they play that game. Same could be true for Bo Atkinson. But, you know, if we're talking about roster management strategy, which is a wild deviation from where this conversation began, you're looking at homegrown developmental project like Kenyatta Jackson and Caden Curry and Arvell Reese and Sonny Styles, Jalen McClain, all being way more important to your program than hoping that you hit a home run financially and in terms of production through the transfer portal.
Well, it's a reminder that Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, Texas, et cetera, these like elite of the elite teams around the country, they evaluate better than other schools. They recruit better than other schools. They develop better than other schools. And so if you're getting lucky and you have an opportunity to bring in a Caleb Downs from a program like Alabama and a coach like Nick Saban, sure, you can expect him to come in and be ready made. The rest of those guys coming from other schools, I mean, again, Josh Simmons became a first round pick. But when you go from North Carolina to Ohio State, especially what North Carolina was becoming in the last couple of years, just a disaster. When you go from Rice to Ohio State, like that is a leap, man. Like it is not normal for guys to come in. The Jonah Jacksons of the world, like those are the rare of the rare. Those are the guys who are like, okay, this is a guy who went from Rutgers to Ohio State and belonged at Ohio State right away. The acclimation period, you even see it for a guy who was a borderline All-American and Max Clair. Like it is a substantial jump. And for guys who have not cut their teeth in that program, in that type of program, it is really, really hard to come in and fit. It is really, really, even if you're coming in as Ethan Onyanwa and you come in and you're like, hey, I could be off to the NFL, and you're competing against a guy like Gabe Van Sickle. Gabe had a whole year and a half in the Ohio State program ahead of Ethan. And that is a major deal. That is a major, major advantage, because it's not just about what you do on the field. It's about everything else. And when you're at a place like Rice or North Carolina, which is a fine program, but it's not Ohio State level. When you're at a place like that, you aren't doing the same things on a day-to-day basis you are at Ohio State. You're not being challenged the way you are at Ohio State. And ultimately, what you find is that these kids take time. Everyone's, you know, Ohio State always tells us, and all the coaches you've ever talked to in your life will say, well, everyone's on their own timeline. Everyone's on their own path. But when players come into a program like Ohio State and they're getting paid seven figures in some cases, there is not a lot of patience for that timeline, and there is not a lot of patience for that development. If you're not coming in ready to go, Ohio State sees it as a one-year investment, and then you move on. But when you have another guy like Gabe Van Sickle or Philip Daniels, who you count on for 2 or 3 years, it becomes a whole different ball of wax. And, you know, it's the way it is.
Yeah. I mean, the rosters change and the seasons change, but comfort doesn't. Call the Waterworks and Header Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing for maintenance, installation, and repairs, or visit online at thewaterworks.com. The Waterworks and Header Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing are proud sponsors of Ohio State Athletics. So the third and final thing, which, now, that's a moving target. We've talked about several things, and we've actually sort of mashed them all into one big thing. with a bunch of deviations, but who would you say, Berm, is the most underrated contributor throughout this first 13 games for Ohio State?
You know, I'm glad you asked, because inside baseball here for folks who don't know how we operate the day-to-day, you know, arrangement of the show, I pre-make the graphics that go on the front cover of these. And I don't know how it's possible that a guy who's an All-American and the Block O is underappreciated, but it's clearly Sonny Styles. It's clearly Sonny Styles. He has been as steady and as consistent and as good as any linebacker in the country this year. Has he made a bunch of flash plays, splash plays? No, he hasn't. And that's okay. It's not what he's been asked to do. When Sonny is asked to just clean up the mess because Arvell's going to do this and Caleb's going to do this and the defensive lineman, Sonny has done it all. I am so happy for him that he was added as an All-American on Wednesday, becoming the seventh Ohio State All-American on this team. He totally deserves it. He's going to be a first-round pick. He's probably going to be the second linebacker drafted in April. Everything that you could have expected out of Sonny Styles' career, he has accomplished, and he's done it without ever deviating from his plan. He's done it without ever getting bitter about the couple of years where he's been back and forth, three defensive coordinators and all the other things. He's done it all, and Sonny Styles deserves a ton of credit. I hope that Ohio State fans will remember him as fondly as they remember the splashes of Arvell Reese this year, because Sonny has absolutely deserved it.
So you said the second linebacker taken because you believe Arvell Reese will be the first.
Correct.
So I think the most underrated contributor to Ohio State's success this year is James Laurinaitis.
Now you're just playing a game here. I didn't know we were doing this.
I am playing a game with you. What has happened with the restoration, the renaissance of the Silver Bullets is remarkable. And we talk so much about Matt Patricia's impact and taking the personnel that was on hand and finding different ways to use them. And that includes Arvell Reese. And we've seen that with different fronts and the splash plays that he was making throughout the year. But James Laurinaitis is the one who was pounding the table to have Arvell Reese in that room in the first place. Seems like Matt Patricia agreed. Let James Laurinaitis work with Arvell Reese, Sonny Styles, Peyton Pierce. Let him go recruit guys like Riley Pettijohn and TJ Alford. This room is in a place that James Laurinaitis would have expected it to be for the duration of the last 20 years when he left it behind as a player. But that was not the case. There was certainly a dip there, and it would have been hard to imagine 7-8 years ago this group getting back to the level that Bobby and Anthony and AJ Hawk and James and Marcus Freeman and so many others had established throughout the rich tradition of that coveted and important position on the Ohio State defense. And you looked at the drought of high level draft picks or Big Ten linebackers of the year or all Big Ten selections even. And I think Pete Warner was a great player. Tuff Borland's contributions were not appreciated as much as they could have been or should have been. But if we're talking about those two compared to the absolute freaks that are running around at linebacker right now, that's like looking at two completely different, that's night and day, that's earth and the moon. It's like whatever comparison you want to use, like it's not the same. No. And the pipeline is now full at a level that is exactly what you would expect at Ohio State. And James deserves full marks for that.
Yeah, what I was going to say, and you brought up Pete, but like if you challenged, if you quizzed, if you tested the average Buckeyes fan, you said, hey, in the last eight years of Ohio State football, who's the best linebacker Ohio State's had? And like, I think the answer is clearly Pete Warner until this year. And that, you know, Tommy Eichenberg was an all Big Ten, you know, a Big Ten linebacker of the year. He was a guy that did a lot of great things, but the difference is stark. And I think you bring up a point. You talk about James as the guy that was pounding the table for Arvell Reese to be in that room. He was also the guy pounding the table for Sonny Styles to be in that room. And if you think back in the last 7, 8, 9 years since the Jerome Baker departure in 2017, really one of the things that has been a hallmark or a trademark or the black mark on the linebacker room was not playing guys that they should have been playing at linebacker. Jonathan Cooper, for example, who's playing in the NFL at a level nobody ever expected him to play based on his Ohio State career. Barron Browning, same way, not being put in the spot to really succeed because he was playing linebacker and he shouldn't have been. He should have been playing a rush end. So like it's been just this hodgepodge mismatch of coaches and people leaving, defense coordinators, all the rotation. And when you get an opportunity to get in there and have a coach like James Laurinaitis, who I'm on the record as saying, I think he will be Ohio State's next head coach. I've said that before. I'll say it again. I think whenever Ryan Day decides to hang him up, I think James Laurinaitis is the absolute right choice to be Ohio State's next head coach, unless it happens like next year or something. But there are certainly a case to be made that James Laurinaitis has elevated the linebacker room from a recruiting and on the field standpoint, exactly like people thought he would, which was on the level that Brian Hartline did when Brian took over in 2018. So now you have to continue building on it. Ohio State hoping to add James Laurinaitis' top target in the class of 2027 on Friday, as Quentin Cypher, the linebacker from North Carolina, will make his decision between Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, and Miami. So like if you're talking about going out and winning a big recruiting battle for a linebacker, and you're competing against Georgia and Alabama and Miami, that's the type of things that Ohio State was not winning on the recruiting trail before James Laurinaitis came into the fold. I think they will win that one on Friday. And then you get started all over again. And that's what James has done. He's really done a remarkable job, and he's such a great ambassador for the program.
He is. And now, not underappreciated, at least not on the Austin and Berm show, not on a Three Things Thursday, not on the beat presented by the Waterworks. Three things. I don't know if that was three things. It was one or six or seven. Who knows what it could actually be. But however many we get into will come from you. Again, a Freaky Friday mailbag is on the way for the beat there. So send in those questions to theaustinandbermshow@gmail.com. theaustinandbermshow@gmail.com. We'll dive into those. Yes, Berm.
I have one thing to say. Folks, if you want to get ahead of things, you want to be a little proactive. I know Christmas is next week. I know your wallet's stretched thin. But guess what? Saturday, about 4 p.m., we're going to know who Ohio State is playing in the Cotton Bowl. And So go to SeatGeek, go to StubHub, go to wherever you got to find your Cotton Bowl tickets. Right now, they're like $350, something like that on StubHub.
Well, they're going to go up if Texas
A&M They're going to go way up on Saturday if Texas A&M wins. And they very likely will because they're playing at home. So buy them now and prevent the home field advantage from materializing for Texas A&M next week in Dallas. Thank you for your time.
Yes, that public service announcement was paid for by no one, just Berm's personal burning desires to not see a bunch of maroon at Jerry World on New Year's Eve. So
I think maroon is such a weird word. Like you think about how many other, okay, so red has multiple meanings, right? Blue has multiple meanings.
Uh-huh, sure.
Green, like green doesn't really have multiple meanings. We've ascribed it to things like envy or whatever, but it's not really like a natural fit there. It's not like if someone says, "Oh boy, you look green," you know, you're gonna. But maroon.
Well, green.
Maroon,
you're also, you could be sick as well.
Like yeah, but look, even that is like it's sort of a leap, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. Because of all the different shades, I just wonder. You know, purple, orange. There's not a lot of other. I just think maroon is just a weird color. You know, I like to talk to people at Crayola and ask them if we can shift that a little bit.
I had no idea where that was going to go. I think you could have
just started maroon. Welcome to the party, pal. Me neither.
Maroon is a weird color. I think we can all agree to that. We'll see if Texas A&M can save us or if Miami can save us from having to see
maroon
that.
Five. Like if I had one conversation with Adam Levine, that would be the first question I'd ask. What does that even mean?
I have a lot of other questions for Adam Levine.
Well, I want to start there. I want to start with a softball.
All right. Julian Sayin's favorite band, of course. All right, that's it. That's more than three things. I don't even know what those things were. Thanks for joining us on Thursday on the beat. We will talk to you at the Freaky Friday mailbag tomorrow. So long.